Redbeard in the studio for the debut by JoJo Gunn.
If Sly and the Family Stone and Little Feat had had a love child, it would have been JoJo Gunn. We love those two bands, and in our own way, we tried to grab that and put it in a bottle. You know, it's real hard to have second acts in rock and roll, and the fact that we left such a great band as Spirit for an unknown future, and we actually pulled it off and had a hit on our first record was unbelievable. Hey everybody, Jay Ferguson here in the studio for the first album from JoJo Gunn.
The story of JoJo Gunn begins with singer, songwriter, keyboard player Jay Ferguson and bass player Mark Andes, high school buddies who comprise two-fifths of the LA-based progressive band Spirit. After four albums, Spirit was beginning to grow dysfunctional in the family that plays together, according to Jay Ferguson.
I know that musically, as in other areas, the band was five individuals trying to find the center. And Mark and I were, for lack of a better term, we were the rockers in the band. We came out of the valley and out of that whole Jan and Dean, Beach Boys, San Fernando Valley drag strip culture, English invasion culture, and we believed in rock and roll. And we were always lobbying to make Spirit more of a rock band, as Cass was lobbying to keep the jazz, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think we would, you know, we'd lay awake, you know, in the hotel rooms and go, yeah, well, God, think of this band. How would it be to be in a rock and roll band? And it was pretty cool for us at the point. Well, after the politics of the band got so thick, and after this one event, we really took it seriously and started thinking about being in another band. I think the first move was a decision that we didn't want to take anything from Spirit. We didn't want to take the name. We didn't want to take royalties. We just wanted to make this clean and say, you guys keep going, that's fine, we're just going to go to the side here, we're going to step out. So that was the first decision. And then it was really going back to Topanga, because we had time, this is where we all lived, and kind of woodshedding, playing guitar, playing piano, listening to bands, kind of dreaming about what kind of a band would you like to be in. Mark had a brother, Matt was a great guitar player. Matt would kind of sit in and we'd kind of build the dream with him. Pretty soon we realized that, wait a minute, we're writing songs here. We're actually putting this band together. At that point is we realized that we're not playing around here. We've got to go tell the rest of the band. We've got to tell the rest of Spirit that we're leaving. And we did. And that's when it all hit the fan.
It was the summertime rock radio song of 1972, JoJo Gunn's Run, Run, Run from their first album. Keyboard player, singer, songwriter Jay Ferguson remembers that his credentials with Mark Andes, both being from the band Spirit, was a significant calling card.
Oh, it was great. I mean, Spirit was a great plus. You look at some of the first posters for JoJo Gunn shows, and they come right out and they say JoJo Gunn featuring Jay Ferguson and Matt and Mark Andes of Spirit, you know, especially in LA, because Spirit was an LA band. That was a great thing to have in your resume. There were a lot of fans that loved the band and loved the individuals in the band. So we had a leg up right there. Matt, who was Mark's brother, we kept looking at Matt and going, well, Matt's just going to kind of play guitar until we find a guitar player. And then one day we realized that there was nobody that could play what we wanted to hear other than Matt. So he was in the band and we needed a drummer. And we were looking about in LA and there was a girl in Topanga, living in Topanga, was a friend of Mark's, who said, you know, I've been in Texas. Maybe she was out from Texas, but there's this drummer you got to hear, Curly Smith. And she raved and raved and raved. And Curly Smith was a kid. He was 19. And we finally said, okay, let's fly him out. And Curly came out, and that was it. That was the fourth member right there. We played at the most local level we knew, which was Topanga Canyon. And the first show we did was on the back of a flatbed truck at the Topanga Canyon Community Center. That was sort of our coming out. The Topanga types all gathered. They knew us from Spirit. They didn't know us from JoJo Gunn. And we rocked. We rocked, and the crowd loved it, and that was it. We were on our way. From there, it was club dates in L.A., and it just seemed like things went very fast for us. People really liked the sound. Promoters liked it. Promoters that knew us from Spirit started adding us to the shows. So we were playing the Hollywood Palladium, I mean, pretty big venues, unsigned. And that's where David Geffen found us.
It was 1971, and while much of the record business was still centered in London and New York City then, many of the new stars were emanating from a very hip L.A. musical scene that included Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Joni Mitchell, and the Mamas and the Papas. The biggest and brightest L.A. stars shared a common manager, a very young yet astute man named David Geffen. Who was this guy? Jay Ferguson and JoJo Gunn wanted to know.
Who was this guy? I mean, you'd be in a room, you'd be backstage with, you know, 20 people, and the most unassuming guy in the corner, this guy sort of blended in, sat back, was David Geffen. And he'd be watching and listening and learning. He introduced himself to us, and we knew him as, you know, pretty successful manager, but not as a record label executive. And here he was starting his own label, totally unproven, Asylum Records. I remember he came to us and he said, you know, I've got this label and I've got two names for the label. What do you think, Asylum or Benchmark? Everybody said Asylum, David. So he had this label, and the first act he signed was Jackson Browne. Second act he signed was JoJo Gunn. I think third act was the Eagles. He had not clearly lost his touch. He knew what he wanted, and he was picking the best of L.A. Coming on at that point. And there was no L.A. sound previous to Asylum Records. There was sort of the 60s L.A. experience, which is the Doors and the Byrds and Spirit, but his early stable defined what became the L.A. sound. So he signed us, and we made our first record.
Shake that fat
That's JoJo Gunn from their 72 debut with Shake That Fat. It turns out that the band's name has a legitimate, if not obscure, pedigree, according to JoJo Gunn's Jay Ferguson.
We were in Name Hell, and anybody out there in a band knows what I'm talking about, or anybody that's pregnant and is going to have a baby. I mean, naming is so hard. And we've been through 1,000 names, nothing fit. And I got so desperate, I literally went to the Rock Encyclopedia, it was one of the early editions, and just started thumbing through it. And I got to the Bees. Thank God it was early on. It was Chuck Berry. And kind of went down and was reading in Chuck Berry's 3 or 4 pages, and this name popped out of a song that I'd never heard of, JoJo Gunn. And it turned out it was a B-side of a single. I don't know if I think it was on one album called Berries on Top. It was about this monkey in the jungle who was, you know, causing endless strife with his pranks. He was pulling the elephant's tail and doing this and that. But that was JoJo Gunn, and we loved it. We said, that's it. That's the name. And it was done. So 2 years later, we're on the road, and we're in St. Louis at the airport. We're in a bar. And there at the bar is Chuck Berry. And like, we are beside ourselves. We're trembling. It's like, here he is. And so I finally had the courage to go up to Chuck Berry and introduce myself, you know, and he was like, who needs this? I said, Mr. Berry, I just want to tell you, we love you so much. We named our band after one of your songs. And I said, we're JoJo Gunn. And he looked at me and he had no idea what I just said. There was no recognition that he'd ever written the song. I think he had absolutely forgotten about it. He just, and it was like, okay, next.
Oh,
JoJo Gunn from their 1972 first album with Babylon. Coming up next, Jay Ferguson conjures up musical images of Little Feat meets Sly and the Family Stone. I'm Redbeard in the studio for the debut by JoJo Gunn. We're back in the studio, revisiting that classic JoJo Gunn 1972 debut album. I'm Redbeard. You know, if you open that first bombastic pink album cover, the inside photo of the original JoJo Gunn lineup speaks volumes about a halcyon time in the L.A. music scene. Here's Jay Ferguson.
It was a great time in our lives. And the only thing I can compare it to was to the experience of another band that was actually very influential on us, which was The Band, and music from Big Pink. And they went to this, they were up upstate New York, and they recorded in a barn, and they just, you could tell that they'd left the city, they were up there on their own, they'd woodshedded, they just created this little sound all on their own in this kind of remote place. And then in our own way, that's what we did in Topanga Canyon. We had this little, 12 by 14 storage shed that was our rehearsal room. It was so small, you could barely get us in there. We went in there every day and we played. We didn't play for anybody else. We didn't do any shows. We didn't call people on the phone. We didn't schmooze. We just went in there and played and we wrote. And it was just this little insular family thing. And out of that came all those first songs. And they really just poured out. It was great.
Working tables on the border, serving pie and coffee orders, looking like she's dead on her feet.
Met her on the way to Dallas working in the Burger Palace. That just about describes the beginnings of countless great love affairs, including my own. From the song Barstow Blue Eyes by Jay Ferguson, included on JoJo Gunn's debut album. Jay says the band drew from a variety of West Coast influences.
If Sly and the Family Stone and Little Feat had had a love child, that would have been JoJo Gunn. We love those two bands, and in our own way, we tried to grab that and put it in a bottle. Years later, we're booked on a tour of the South. This is like Charlotte and Biloxi, deep South, and the bill is Sly and the Family Stone and JoJo Gunn, and. The promoter was out of his mind because it was basically a 90% black audience that came to see Sly. And then here come these four white guys from the West Coast coming out and singing about Barstow. It was the damnedest thing. Barstow Blue Eyes, yeah. And it was like, we'd come on stage and the entire audience was like, okay, all right. You know, it was in the trench. And by the end of our show, you know, we hopefully would gain their respect. And then Sly would come on and just blow the place apart. But the highlight of that tour was... one night, and I think his name was Freddie, the guitar player for Sly, couldn't make it. Sly needed a guitar player. Word comes to our dressing room. Tell your guitar player to go to Sly's dressing room right now. Matt goes over. Matt suddenly becomes one of the Family Stone for a night. He plays guitar on stage without one rehearsal, not knowing any of the songs. He's got his slide guitar on, and he's rocking with Sly and the Family Stone. I've never seen him happier in my life.
Tucson, Vicksburg, midnight flight to Pittsburgh. Rockin' and rollin', I want to see this one rollin'. Two shows, everything goes ooh. Slippin' and slidin', all ripped up and ridin'. Well, I should have known 99 days, and my body's wasted.
Days, written by Jay Ferguson for JoJo Gunn's first album in 1972. Next, the boyhood pals grow up and grow apart, putting their new band's future under the gun. I'm Redbeard, and you're in the studio with JoJo Gunn.
Hey, we're back in the studio for the JoJo Gunn debut. I'm Jay Ferguson here with Redbeard.
Thanks, Jay. There's a lovable looseness that permeates the first JoJo Gunn album, a rollicking sense of fun, worldly wise, but nobody gets hurt. While their previous band spirit had been like going to prep school for both Mark Andes and Jay Ferguson, their new group, JoJo Gunn, was school's out.
Oh, man, you're hitting it on the head, Redbeard. Yeah, Spirit was a serious undertaking. You know, we got together and we got very serious about the music and about each other and about the changes. And there wasn't this sort of let's cut it loose and be A, sloppy, or B, funky, or C, fun. It was let's be Spirit. And Spirit was, you know, had this sort of higher calling to it. I can't put a word to it, but it was serious business. So here we are, we're out of school, we're with JoJo Gunn, we can rock, and we can be funny and funky and sloppy and all the above. And it really is, it's like Kids in a Candy Store, that first album. It was a release for us. It was like, let's have fun again. Hearing Run, Run, Run was like, oh my God, we're not going to disappear and blow away into dust. We're actually getting a second chance here. You know, it's real hard to have second acts in rock and roll, and the fact that we left such a great band as Spirit for an unknown future, and we actually pulled it off and had a hit on our first record was unbelievable. First time we heard that, it was like a huge sigh of relief. Well, it, you know, probably was more personal to Mark and myself, because this was really the root music, the roots music that we lived and loved. This is going to run parallel to slide guitar in my life, because there's something about summer music, and I think about the songs that I've done that have been successful, especially Thunder Island and Run, 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 and it's summer music. And, you know, it's that Southern California thing. It's the top down, it's the San Fernando Valley about 8 o'clock in July, and it's still light, and it's about 85 degrees, and the world's your oyster, and everything's possible.
We
From their first JoJo Gunn album in 1972, Jay Ferguson's song Take It Easy. It was like a slogan for the times, almost like have a nice day.
There's a movie out that speaks more about it than I could, which is Almost Famous. There was so much of us in that. And, you know, it's interesting. There was an article that came out in Rolling Stone with Cameron Crowe, and they showed some of his notebooks from the early 70s, and it was a day planner. And it was like, go to the Bad Company record release, then down there was JoJo Gunn press party. And he was around there, and he was around us. And it was this sort of working man's rock and roll level. I mean, there was Foghat, there was Bad Company, there was JoJo Gunn, there were bands like Black Oak Arkansas, 38 Special, Leonard Skinner. It was just this sort of slice of America out there.
A big slice of America, or should I say big gulp, stands out in Jay Ferguson's memory.
I still wake up screaming. You got to realize where you're at. You're at the Milwaukee Beer Fest. The operative word is beer, and it was everywhere. And they were serving it in bottles. This is the scary part. Bottles and cans. It was like a four-day festival, and one day they had, you know, this sort of rock and roll show they put up, and they built this big stage right on the edge of the lake, and the acts were Humble Pie and JoJo Gunn. They got 250,000 people to come out for this thing. It was the biggest non-pop festival crowd they'd had in the nation up to that point. It was just unbelievable. So we get on stage, and the crowd is just totally out of control. I mean, they are just, they've been drinking all day. They're in the hot sun. You get on stage and you see this crowd ahead of you, and it almost disappears over the horizon, that many people. And you see this sort of, from the end, back part of the crowd, you see this, what looks like rain. And it goes up and it comes down. And then it gets a little closer and it goes up and it comes, arcs up and arcs down, and it gets closer to the stage, and you realize that it's a wave of beer bottles. The people in the last row threw all their beer bottles and they hit the people 40 rows ahead of them. They picked up their bottles, they threw it. And this thing is coming at us like a tsunami, and finally it hits the stage, and I'm telling you, it was just raining bottles and cans. It was incredible. The crowd was so out of control, they had basically crew members at the foot of the stage battling, and they were trying to like spawn, jumping up on the stage. They were leaping up on wire and barbed wire and posts trying to get to the stage. So we did our show. We get out of there. I mean, the amps are punctured. The drums are broken. You know, we were lucky we didn't get killed. Humble Pie takes the stage. It gets even crazier. The crowd lights fire to the stage. They set the stage on fire. Humble Pie has to escape into the lake on a boat.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was the scariest crowd. It was like being in a cage with a lion. Scary crowd.
Girl, soften.
That's the Jay Ferguson song Ready Freddy that led off the follow-up JoJo Gunn album released in March 1973, the album called Bite Down Hard. And even though they'd had a hit with Run, Run, Run and were having some fun, Mark Andes was being pulled in another musical direction, according to his boyhood buddy, Jay Ferguson.
That was another tough one because we came out of such brotherhood and we were so close. And in the course of that year, we released the album, we're on tour, and somehow people change. People go through stages in life, and Mark kind of went into one direction, and the band was in another direction. And it was sad because we didn't know how to communicate or cross that gap, and we just got further apart, and Mark seemed to be making lifestyle choices and feeling about music that just really went counter to where JoJo Gunn was going, and it became apparent that we weren't really the same band members. We weren't really the same bandmates anymore. It was sort of a mutual situation. I think we understood as much as Mark, and maybe we forced the issue. It was like, this isn't working. We're not getting along. We don't see the same goals, and we're kind of different people. And that's when Mark left the band. And we went to high school. We grew up in the valley together. We, you know, hung out and raised hell in the orange groves in the San Fernando Valley. So it was a sad moment. It was a real heartbreaker there. There's no doubt that Mark was going to continue on, and he just was with a different family. I mean, he went to Colorado and became the bass player with Firefall, and they came out of the box and did really well, played around, and then ended up a couple of years later as the bass player for Heart. And that was almost a decade of playing, I think, for Mark, and that was, you know, some tremendous success for him. That was when they really hit their stride and were doing the arena tours, and you know, he did very well.
JoJo Gunn went on to release a total of 4 albums with various lineups, all built around the core of drummer Curly Smith and Jay Ferguson singing and songwriting.
Prior to Rhino repackaging and releasing them, I just know from my contacts that there's been a sort of a worldwide internet-driven quest for JoJo Gunn on CD. There's been a lot of people talking about it, a lot of people asking for it, and it just somehow never filtered to the corporate level until, you know, Rhino picked up on it. And then they went, oh, well, wait a minute, it's unnatural. But for a long time, I mean, it was like the lost JoJo Gunn music. You could not get it. There's almost a sense of deja vu in that when Spirit broke up, we felt we'd sort of failed and people didn't care that much and the sales were down and we kind of thought we were going away. And then as time passed, the Sardonicus album picked up and gained more converts and sales, and everything just kept rolling. And the same thing with JoJo Gunn. It seems like it went off the radar for a while. And then as time passed, people kept bringing it up and saying, oh, yeah, I love that band. We'd run into other musicians around the world, and they'd say, you know, the band I love from the 70s was JoJo Gunn. And it just was one of those things that very slowly snowballed. And in people looking back on, God, that was a good band. That was good music. And finally, you know, it gets to the level of a Rhino record saying, hey, those were worth re-releasing. Let's do it. So it's a feeling of vindication. It's great. It's great to have that stuff come back and to relive it. You relive all the high points and you relive all the low points. And, you know, sometimes you wish you could go back and do certain things over again. But it's nice that it did not disappear. It's still with us.
Yeah, yeah.
Showing the maturing of JoJo Gunn. That's Jay Ferguson's Take Me Down Easy from their second album, Bite Down Hard, now packaged with JoJo Gunn's classic debut on compact disc. I'm Redbeard. We'll be back in the studio after this.